morning. It's good to be with you today. We're going to continue our study in the book of Proverbs as we've been doing the last few Sunday mornings, going through the book of Proverbs and looking at different subject matter that we see is addressed for us in this book of wisdom literature. The subject of the lesson this morning will be the true heart in worship. And the Proverbs has a lot to say about what our heart should be. But in Romans chapter 12, we are told that we need to present our bodies as a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable to God. This is your reasonable service. So Paul declares that our lives are to be offered as a living sacrifice, as opposed to the physical sacrifices that we saw in the Old Testament. I know you've probably heard this point before, that this is what we do under the new law, that we present ourselves. And so what does that mean? It means that we give of ourselves, we give of our time, we give of our heart, we give of our mind. So Paul really is declaring that all of ourselves, all of our lives are to be offered as this sacrifice, which is considered a reasonable sacrifice, is considered reasonable worship to God. So this word reasonable implies, you know, worship that is generated not in the way that we sometimes use the word reasonable, but the reasoning part of us is what it's talking about. The mind that we have, the reasoning inward part of man. The word is also translated as sincere in John chapter 4, verse 24, that we need to worship in spirit and in truth. And that is something that we need to apply in our lives. So when we talk about this, what Paul is saying is that our worship, when we come together on Sunday morning for an hour or two to hear a lesson, this is the time in our life that we are going to worship, that we are going to give of our lives as a spiritual sacrifice. Now, the rest of the week, we don't have to do anything, but we're going to give of ourselves as a living sacrifice, you know, an hour or two a week. I think we all realize that's ridiculous to say that's all that God would want of us. What Paul is saying is that our entire life is to be a consistent, constant sacrifice before the Lord. There's really never a time that I'm to turn off sincerity. There's never a time in my life that I'm supposed to turn off my devotion to God as far as giving myself as a living sacrifice. I understand that there's things that we do together when we come together to worship that may be different than what we do the rest of the week. But what we do every day of our life should be something that is pleasing to God, that is sacrificial. And Solomon is teaching his son in the book of Proverbs that he needs to have a true heart in worship, that he's not going through the motions. If he is going to live what we've been calling the good life, as is defined in the book of Proverbs, this good life that is defined in the book of Proverbs is something that Solomon wants for his son. And part of that is true worship. And so, first of all, he talks about the evil of having an insincere heart. In Proverbs chapter 15, verses 8 and 9, it says that the sacrifice of the wicked is an abomination to the Lord, but the prayer of the upright is his delight. The way of the wicked is an abomination to the Lord, but he loves him who follows righteousness. And it is very interesting to note here that sometimes the wicked will pay sacrifice. That's one of the first things that you notice about this, that we think, well, sacrifice is all that we need to do. Well, Solomon is saying the wicked sometimes sacrifice, and that sacrifice is not pleasing to God. Well, what is it about that sacrifice of the wicked is not pleasing? God, it's saying here that God sometimes will not be pleased with those that try to bring something to him with the spirit of wickedness. The worship of those who are not dedicated to the Lord, those that practice wickedness, it's an abomination. There was a movie years and years ago that I may be among the ones here that are old enough to remember. It was called Elmer Gantry, and it was based on a book called Elmer Gantry, and it was about a man who was a preacher and an evangelist that went around in tent meetings, and he was a fake. He was a fraud. He was somebody that really lived a life of wickedness, but yet throngs of people followed after him because he's very charismatic. And so what he was on the outside was very different than what he was on the inside. And when the book of Proverbs here tells us that the sacrifice of the wicked is an abomination, it reminds me of those that would practice those kind of things. The worship of those that are not truly dedicated to the Lord, but what they're practicing is wickedness, is not pleasing. It's disgusting to God. And so there's no merit to that sacrifice without the heart really being involved in the worship. And so Solomon here is describing this is a really great way to make yourself miserable, or to have a miserable life, is to live an external religious life that's really devoid of any emotion in the heart. You know, that's a miserable way of existing. That, well, I'm here, I'm worshiping, I'm trying to put on a show, I'm trying to make everybody believe that I'm something that I'm not. That's a miserable way of existing, because it doesn't really come from the heart. So if you just worship God externally, that can be a miserable existence. What happens when you just worship God externally? It means, you know, not coming from your heart. How would that manifest itself in your life? Well, you know, worship is dull. It's boring. You know, when the heart's not engaged in the activity. And that's really true about anything in life. If you've ever been to a football game and you see you know, families that are there, you might see that there's some people in the family that are more engaged in the game than others. There might be a father, and I know this may be stereotypical, but the father is engaged in it and the mother is not, or vice versa. Or you've got, you know, kids that are more interested in the concession stand than they are in anything that's going on at the game. And so there's some whose heart is in it, some whose heart is not. You know, Jarell and I just got back from California, which was a work trip for me. The fact that my work's training center was two blocks from Disneyland is irrelevant, except that we went to Disneyland a bunch. But, you know, the reason that we went there is because, well, you know, Disneyland's two blocks away from my training center. And so we need something to do. We might as well go there. We're not really interested in doing that. You know, everybody that knows me knows that's not true. In fact, there may have been some pulling of the strings for me to take the training in California instead of Georgia. You know, because I had so many conflicts with the time that it was in Georgia, so I had to go to California. So we went. And we were not walking around the park thinking, oh, this is so horrible. You know, why did we come here? It's so hot and the lines are so long, which it's not actually in California. If you want to compare California to Florida, the weather is much better in California. So there may have been some other people that were there who were drug along because, you know, the rest of the family is there and the father's just there to pay for it. And maybe their heart's not really into what they're doing. The point that I'm making here is that there's a lot of things that people go through the motions in their life. They may not have a heart for it. They may not be interested. And God is saying that if this is true about your heart when it comes to worship, that it's not pleasing to Him. It's disgusting to God for us to make sacrifices without the heart being involved. Worshiping God externally leads to things being dull, and being miserable instead of you enjoying and benefiting from worship, then it's something that's more of a drudgery. So that's a good way to test whether or not your heart's really involved in worship. If you think services are boring, if you don't like singing, if you don't like praying, and it all seems worthless to you, you don't want to read your Bible, you don't want to come to class, and you don't want to come back at the evening services. In short, you know, you simply really don't care about anything that's going on, but if you don't come, you know somebody will call you, and it's better to come and be there rather than have somebody, you know, call you and check up on you, and then you feel like you have to be deceitful and say that you didn't feel good when you actually, you know, felt fine enough to do other things. You just really didn't want to be there. And so you got up, you took a shower, you came, you sat there. Is God pleased with that? Because, you know, we made somewhat of an effort to get our physical bodies drug into the building and plant ourselves onto the pew. Okay, you know, now God's real satisfied with that. And my heart is so far away from what's going on, I'm really not there mentally. I think we understand that God is not happy just because we showed up for an hour or two a week to think about Him. That's what the wise writer is saying. That kind of sacrifice is not pleasing to God. The way of the wicked is an abomination to the Lord, but He loves him who follows righteousness. In Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 26, Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 26, it says, "The thoughts of the wicked are an abomination to the Lord, but the words are pure and pleasant." This is another indication that God is really caring about our heart. And when we say heart, we're thinking about our thoughts and whether or not we are worshiping God from a sincere frame of mind. The Lord measures that. He knows that. He knows that everything about us. And sometimes we forget that. We must see that we are not fooling God with some kind of outward action. And we can fool others with that. And maybe sometimes we can be very good at fooling others with our outward actions and our outward words and the things that we do. But God's not impressed with that. The thoughts of the wicked are an abomination to the Lord. The very inward thoughts. It's not just about actions. In Proverbs chapter 28 and verse 9, "The one who turns away his ear from hearing the law, even his prayer is an abomination." The point here is that there's really no point to hypocritical living. The person who doesn't have the heart desiring to hear the word of the Lord will not have his prayers answered. It's looked upon as an abomination to God. God is calling upon us for a sincere heart. So, with that said, I would like to warn you that just because you feel like maybe your heart is not sincere, or that maybe you don't feel like you're at the level that you need to be, that is a reason to give up. Because I've known of those and counseled those and talked to others that have gone through periods in their life where they don't feel as spiritual as they think that they need to be. That they don't have the desire or the will to do God's will as they think that they should. And so you look at Proverbs and listen to the sermon. Well, you know, if I can't worship God from a sincere heart, you know, 100%, then it's an abomination, so I might as well just give up and not do it at all. I wouldn't want you to take that point away from the lesson. what you should do is pray God that you will pray to God that you will change your heart, that your heart will change, and that you will be the person that is not hypocritical, that you will be the one who doesn't turn his ear away from the Word of God, that your worship and that your life, your living sacrifice, will not be an abomination to the Lord. But Proverbs 28, verse 9, tells us the one who turns his way, turns away his ear from hearing the law, even his prayer is an abomination. So how do we have a sincere heart? First of all, we need to live in God's presence, which is really something you can't not do anyway. I mean, we're living in God's presence because He's always there. But what I'm saying is that we need to live with a recognition that we are in God's presence. God's there, and if we recognize that He's there, it changes us. Proverbs chapter 15, verse 3, the eyes of the Lord are in every place, keeping watch on the evil and the good. I know most of you that have worked in the business world, if you work for a large company, you have periods of time where you get a notice that somebody is coming to town. And because that person is coming to town to visit, or coming across town from corporate headquarters, whatever, that everybody's got to be on their best behavior. Well, what are we doing normally? I mean, what are we supposed to do differently than what we normally do? Well, hopefully we're all working very hard all the time, but people are saying that because somebody important is going to show up, that you better not be playing solitaire on your computer. You better look like you're working, and everybody needs to tidy up and make sure everything looks presentable. At Florida College, where Jarrell and I went to school, they have a period of time every year, which is the lectureship week, where people from all over the country come. And when we were in school down there, you know, that's when they put out new plants. You know, they plant some flowers. They start painting buildings. They start making things look better than they were. There's actually better food in the cafeteria that week than there is the rest of the time. We called it Hypocrite Week. But you know, so things were not always the same that week as they were the rest of the time. But the point here is that our lives, you know, we don't get a warning. Oh, Randy, God's going to be looking at you this week. You know, this is the week that you really need to pay attention to what you're doing, the way that you're acting, because you know it's your time in the spotlight. We're going to be looking at you. It's every day. The eyes of the Lord are in every place, keeping watch on the evil and the good, watching us all the time. So we need to recognize that God sees it all. God cares about how you treat one another. God cares about how you treat your children, how you treat your spouse, how you treat your parents. He sees a lot of things that the people in here, you know, won't see about you. We see each other a few hours a week, but there's a lot about each other here that we never see. We don't see how the way that you behave in your home. We don't see how you behave in your work environment. But God sees all of that. So the first thing that we need to do to develop a sincere heart is to accept that God sees our heart. And that should change us. I'm not going to get away with an attitude that shows up only on Sunday and has really no care for anything else the rest of the week. God knows my heart, and it needs to be involved. So living in God's presence is a good motivation for us. It's something that can be a very comforting thing to live in God's presence. And those of you that have been been here a long time have heard me mention the song about the all-seeing eye before, that it used to terrify me as a child because I pictured the eye that was always looking at you regardless of where you went. Kind of like a Disney reference. In the Haunted Mansion, you have the eyes that follow you as you're going down the corridor. Now, the all-seeing eye is always there, and that always terrified me. But then I made that mention in a lesson one time, and a brother came up to me and said, "You know, Randy, the all-seeing eye doesn't have to be a terrifying thing. It can also be something that's very comforting. You know, if you are living the way that you should be, if you have that sincere heart and you have really made that commitment to God, living in God's presence means that you're not unnoticed, that God is noticing everything that you do. And that can be a good thing if you're living the right way. So you make a commitment to God. That's how you can have a sincere heart, is to make a commitment. In Proverbs chapter 16 and verse 3, Proverbs chapter 16 verse 3, commit your activities to the Lord and your plans will succeed. So this proverb describes a person that has that trust in his or her life, that the decision and actions that they are making, God's hand is in that. And this really has everything to do with the kind of heart that we are to have, that our plans must be built on God. And when we plan, when we decide, when we act, when we try to apply the wisdom that we see here in the book of Proverbs, it all rotates around us being fully committed to God. Make a commitment to God. And a lack of commitment, a lack of having God as the center of your life, it's going to end up going in the wrong direction. We confess that Jesus is our master, but is he really? Is money our master? Is family our master? A sincere heart makes a commitment to God, makes a commitment to his kingdom, that regardless of what the difficulties of life circumstances are, that we are going to trust in the Lord. We also, when we make a commitment to God, we also realize in our life that God is testing us. Proverbs chapter 17, the wise writer tells his son, "The refining pot is for silver and the furnace for gold, but the Lord tests the hearts." So the illustration here is used of you know, fine metals being refined. And you've probably heard illustrations used about that before, how fire cleans out the impurities. And once you put that metal in the fire, you know, what happens? Well, it burns out. It burns out the wood. It burns out everything that can be burned up. But what's left behind is the pure metal. And the illustration is used that our hearts are tested in the same way, that metal is purified, that God purifies our hearts. So you see what Solomon told his son. The Lord is going to put you in circumstances that are going to test your heart to see whether or not your heart is truly sincere. And you're going to be challenged. And that's difficult. It's very easy for us to read this and say, "Yes, I know that to be true." But then when we are tested, what happens to our attitudes? When we are tested by our brethren, when we are tested by our families, when we fall into some kind of hardship, it's very difficult sometimes for us to take the same advice that we try to give to others. Because when we're not going through the trial, it's very easy for us to tell somebody, "Well, here's what you should do, and this is what you should pray about, and this is how you should react." But when it becomes about us, it's much more personal, of course. What happens to our attitude? Do we pass the test or do we fail it? We claim to have sincere hearts that trust in the Lord, but when we get into a bind, you know, we don't trust in the Lord to provide, but we immediately jump to things that would reflect that we're more interested in our own comfort or that we're interested in our own wisdom. We've talked about this as we've gone through the books of 1 and 2 Samuel, that there are times in the life of David where you can tell that he is seeking the Lord's blessing and the Lord's advice on different circumstances. But there's other times when he jumps the gun, when he's putting his own wisdom into action. And then things don't work out well. And he has to go back and say, well, yeah, I didn't really consult the Lord about that. And we fail when we don't trust in the Lord enough to follow after his will. And so God is refining us. That's what Solomon tells his son, that you're going to have to go through some trials. And how that turns out is going to be based upon you. It's going to be based on your heart. We also are told that we need to train our conscience. Train your conscience. Proverbs chapter 20, verse 27, the spirit of man is the lamp of the Lord, searching the innermost parts of his being. This lesson is going to be the day for Disney references, I guess. But everybody, when you hear conscience, you think about, you know, Jiminy Cricket singing, "Always let your conscience be your guide." And the conscience is something that can be trained. In fact, when you look at the New Testament in Romans 14 and other places as well, there were those that were told not to offend their consciences by eating certain types of meat. And the implication there was, if it offends your conscience, don't do it. But Paul also said that there was no reason for it to offend your conscience because God said it was fine to eat that meat. But as long as it is, if it didn't offend your conscience, you were good. If it did, you needed to either learn better that it was okay. But as long as it offended your conscience, you weren't to do it. So I say all that to say your conscience can tell you wrong. When I was growing up, I thought it was a sin to drink coffee because my parents, when beer commercials would come on TV, they would tell me, "Randy, Christians don't drink beer." And when coffee was offered to my parents, they would always decline it, say, "No, we don't drink coffee." And so I kind of put those two things together. Well, they're declining the alcohol, well, they're declining the coffee too. They just didn't like coffee. It had nothing to do with them thinking that coffee was wrong. And so my dad had a class with somebody at one time, and they offered him coffee, and I told the people there that coffee's a sin. And they had no idea where I had picked that up from. So what the reason I tell you that is because my conscience had been trained to think that drinking coffee was wrong. But my conscience wasn't correct on that. You know, I mean, that's debatable. You know, some of you are probably really, really addicted to it. But I get my caffeine in other ways. But I've never liked it. I've liked the smell of it. But I don't think it's wrong. I don't think it's a sin like I did when I was little. My conscience was trained wrong on that. So the wise writer says that the spirit of man is the lamp of the Lord, searching all the innermost parts of his being. This is indicating that you train your conscience according to a standard. You train your conscience according to the Word of God. And then when you follow that, when you follow your conscience, when it has the right kind of training, then that is a good thing. The conscience is supposed to be a tool of God to help us. That's why Paul tells the Roman brethren that you don't want to offend your conscience. We sometimes sear our consciences and ignore them when we know something to be wrong because our consciences have been trained by the Word of God and we keep ignoring that. It's difficult to have a pure heart before God when you keep violating your conscience. teach your conscience to be upset at sin. Train your conscience so that it will direct you in the right way because it's based on the word of the Lord. Also, be ready to make corrections. You can have a sincere heart by being ready to make corrections. Proverbs 13, verse 10, poverty and shame will come to him who disdains correction, but he who regards a rebuke will be honored. This is also a very wise statement, but one that's very hard to hear because I don't like correction. Does anybody here like correction? Most people don't. Even if it's correction that's going to help me. Maybe something on the job. Well, Brandy, if you'd done it, this way, it would have been easier. And I can look at that and I can appreciate it and learn from it. But it's not always something easy to hear. Well, you did that the wrong way. You take it personally. Poverty and shame will come to him who disdains correction. Solomon is telling his son that you're not going to live perfectly. And it is very foolish for you to ignore mistakes just to save face around someone else. We need to accept our mistakes and not make the same mistakes over and over again so that we can move forward. But have you ever seen someone that will try to mask the fact that they made a mistake because they don't want to appear foolish? And I know that the saying when you're in training a lot of times is that there are no stupid questions or there's no foolish questions. But somebody will usually ask one and then the instructor says, I was wrong about that. There was a foolish question. And everybody laughs when you say that. We all need to learn. We all need to own up to mistakes so we can move forward and declare that, I made a foolish decision. And we can correct those things. That's what the wise writer is saying. If you are so hung up on being right, then you're not going to be one that's going to be pleasing to God. Be ready to make corrections, or poverty and shame will come to you if that's something that you disdain. Too often we compound our problems by making bad decisions one on top of another rather than dealing with the problem so that we can move forward in our lives. A very real example that we saw of that recently was in the life of King David as he compounded the problem that he started with Bathsheba and did not make correction for that immediately, but compounded that in so many ways. And then was finally confronted by Nathan about what he had done. We can see the wise writing here that will help us not go down that road. So many good things here to consider on how to have a sincere heart. How to have a heart that is fully engaged in worshiping God, not just when we come together here, but in the way that we live each day of our life. I hope this will be an encouragement to you. If you have not committed your life to God, if there's any way that we could help you to do that, we'd invite you to come while we stand together and sing.